Welcome back to the conversation. Thank you very much for tuning in to Stand Up today. We talk about important issues that affect you, your life, your community, family, your country. That's what we do every day here on the Indie Channel, which is now Channel 102 with Stand Up. And join us now are two of our favorite guests and two of my closest friends, frankly. Dr. Aaron Carroll and Professor Eric Siegel are both here to talk about the ins and outs of a court decision yesterday and what it means for Obamacare and its future, because it's very confusing and it can get boring too. So we got to be careful, guys, that we keep this interesting and informative. But I have no doubt that these two guys can do that. Most of the country, I think, has been working with the idea that the fight over the Affordable Care Act and its existence is over. Obviously, the Supreme Court has endorsed the vast majority of the law's legality. Congress has, I'm going to argue, given up on its repeal crusade, Republicans. I think by most accounts, the law's implementation, well, not by most accounts, but by most accounts that I think are experts on health policy, it's proving to be quite a success. I'm not sure who's being really hurt by it outside of Hobby Lobby. But that's not necessarily all true. As a federal court yesterday struck down a rule from the IRS making Americans in federally run health insurance marketplaces eligible for subsidies, a decision that can obviously seriously imperil, not obviously, the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. It was a 2-1 decision by a 3-judge panel, and the lone Democratic appointed judge on the panel dissented. Now, there's a lot of ins and outs to this, and that's why we've got our two guests join us. Aaron Carroll is a pediatrician, an MD, works at Indiana University School of Medicine, where he conducts all of the research or oversees the research. He doesn't conduct all the research. He is very popular now on the YouTubes, got his own channel, Healthcare Triage. He's a weekly contributor to the New York Times Upshot. He's an author. He now has 3 books, his most recent just out, called Don't Put That In There and 69 Other Sex Myths Debunked. And what else? He's on Twitter at Aaron E. Carroll. He blogs at The Incidental Economist. Also joining us is Professor Eric Siegel, who is a legal scholar at Georgia State University. He worked for the Department of Justice. He is also an author. Supreme Myths is his book. He's got another book coming out. These two guys have worked together one time, I believe, and on an op-ed for the LA Times. And they're now here joining us to explain this. Hi.
Good morning.
Dude, you were so close to getting all that correct.
Yeah, really. It was actually a Law Review article for Stanford Law Review, but that's close enough.
What else did I get wrong there, though, besides that?
I'll tell you, one really important thing. The fight over Obamacare was not over. I wish it had been over after the Supreme Court's decision upholding some of it and validating some of it a few years ago. A very dedicated group of libertarian/conservative judicial constitutional law professors led by a guy named Jonathan Adler, who you've had on the show once or twice, at Case Western, never stopped working to shut this down. And I just want to say at the outset that people should recognize that this has been a political vendetta now for years on behalf of the Cato Institute, the Heritage Foundation, the Federalist Society, and a lot of different conservative organizations who have never stopped trying to shut down Obamacare. Well, and that's what this lawsuit was about.
Is there any precedent for any progressive organization or conservative organization never giving up on a law that's been passed by Congress in terms of filing lawsuits? Obviously, the Affordable Care Act is a big law and 2,000 pages long, and we know all about that. But, I mean, you know, with FDR's New Deal, with Medicare, with Social Security, I mean, or with anything else that passed, I mean, clearly progressives aren't giving up on Citizens United case and so on. But, I mean, is there precedent for organizations to just keep looking for any kind of detail, any kind of, you know, some people are referring to this as a typo in the law to find a way to overturn it?
I don't think so. You know, before
really?
Not even
with Social Security? I mean, you would know better than I would, don't get me wrong, but I have to imagine that they fought, at least for the first few years, they didn't fight Social Security or anything like that?
Well, first of all, the thing that comes to mind is the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Sure, or there's another good one.
Which was really controversial. But once it was passed, I don't know, but there's a game-changing difference, and I'm not just saying that. There's a book dedicated to this. It's, social media has changed everything, and the presence of legal blogs has changed everything. So the challenge to Obamacare started on a blog called The Volok Conspiracy with Randy Barnett, who's a professor at Georgetown, who did everything in his power to argue Congress didn't have the power to pass the mandate, and Aaron and you and I have talked about that for years. But the difference was they used social media as a way to get their message out, and that made it easier to send the both the political and legal messages. So Randy and the Volok and Jonathan Adler, who instigated this lawsuit, is also on the Volok conspiracy, and that's a game changer. Because it makes arguments accessible that weren't arguments before. And now, of course, the Washington Post has bought the Volok conspiracy. So it has that added, you know, kind of pedigree to it. And that's the difference. It lets organized resistance be much more effective.
There's a really important, most important detail here, which is, are people going to die? And we saw, you know, progressives outraged on Twitter, you know, talking about this. Aaron himself said, you know, what's most disturbing is the gloating here. But I want to play. So let's just get to what this means today for Americans. I want to play Josh Earnest, who is the president's spokesman, yesterday at the White House press briefing. Chris, if you don't mind queuing that back up, because I want to see if Aaron and Eric basically agree with his response to this, and then we'll add to it. Let's take a listen to the president's spokesman yesterday.
The first is, it's important for people all across the country to understand that this ruling does not have any practical impact on their ability to continue to receive tax credits right now. Right now, there are millions of Americans all across the country who are receiving tax credits from the federal government as a result of the Affordable Care Act that is making health care more affordable for them. And while this ruling is interesting to legal theorists, it has no practical impact on their tax credits right now. The second is, there are four different cases making this point that are working their way through the federal court system. Two of them have been dismissed at the district court level. Two of them are awaiting their initial rulings. This, of course, is the appeal of one of those cases. So there is decidedly mixed legal opinion about this. But for those who are keeping score, we're still ahead 2-1 here. What I do anticipate that the Department of Justice will do is they will ask for a ruling from the full D.C. Circuit. As you know, this was a decision that was issued just by three members of the D.C. Circuit, two of whom ruled against the federal government and one agreed with the government's position.
Well, that's the president's spokesman's interpretation of it. I don't know which one of you to go to first. That's so glad you're both on today. Go ahead, Aaron.
Eric may disagree, but that's right. I mean, that's basically – this is all going to come down to, like, sort of – I guess if the – I mean, Eric, of course, is going to know more about this than I know, but I think it's all going to come down to whether the Supreme Court decides to hear this or not, because, you know, the other circuits which are hearing this are actually much more progressive than the D.C., the small part of the D.C. circuit. The entire D.C. circuit has way more Democrats and Republicans, so if it goes on bank to all of them, it's likely going to go in the government's favor. The other case is going to go in the government's favor. It's just going to be a question of whether the Supreme Court decides to take it up after that and how they go.
But to be clear, as of today, no one's losing their insurance or the subsidies to help pay for it.
No, because as long as it stays and they decide to go on bank, it all stays exactly the same.
Well, it's very likely the D.C. Circuit will stay the opinion pending review, though that's not been done yet. So, I assume they're going to do that.
There's no way they're not going to do it. I mean, if there's one thing I feel very sure of, it's that they're going to do that.
So. Hey, listen.
What does that mean?
Pete, a lot of liberals.
What does that mean that the D.C. There are three judges. I didn't even understand why the hell three judges.
Same-sex marriage litigation.
Act like you're talking to someone that didn't go to college, please.
That would be a good analogy. So, you know, like 15 courts have now ruled that same-sex marriage is required in various states. But every time that happens, the decision gets stayed until the appellate process is over. So the status quo was, in these states, gays and lesbians couldn't get married. Then court said, yes, you can, but we're not going to enforce that until the Supreme Court hears it. So the status quo stays the same, pending appeal. In the Affordable Care Act situation, the status quo, as Aaron said, is people have their insurance. The D.C. Circuit says, no, that's illegal, but we're going to stay the decision until the appellate process is over, so the status quo remains the same. And the status quo with the ACA is people have their insurance. Does that
make
sense?
Remember back when they were deciding the individual mandate, some courts said the individual mandate was unconstitutional, some said it was constitutional, but nothing changed. Or it was going to change, even with the Medicaid expansion, until they got to the Supreme Court. Then when they made their decision, that's when everything became real.
Now, let's talk about the Supreme Court for a second, because I was a little bit disturbed yesterday by people writing in Salon and people writing in other fairly liberal places.
I'm always disturbed by people writing in Salon. Continue.
There's an assumption out there. I think Barry Ritholtz, who I love, also repeated one of these things in one of his blogs. There's an assumption the Supreme Court is going to either not hear this case eventually when the D.C. Circuit on Bank Court reverses the panel, or they're going to uphold it. And I would not be that – so I'm having deja vu all over again. 4 years ago, people said there's no way the Commerce Clause won't justify the mandate. The Supreme Court will definitely uphold the mandate under the Commerce Clause. And that turned out to be false, and I think I was one of the few liberals who said that would turn out to be false. I am very worried about what the Supreme Court's going to do in this case. And I'm alone in that, but I am very worried. There are four votes that are going to say exactly the same thing that the D.C. Circuit said. We know that Thomas and Kennedy and Alito Scalia will probably vote that way. So really, the fate of the Affordable Care Act is going to hang again with Justice Roberts. I don't know what he's going to do. I do not know what he's going to do.
And I don't think Eric is wrong in the legal aspect, but I personally don't think that this is like the death knell of the Affordable Care Act, no matter what.
Oh, okay.
Because you have to remember that when you took away the individual mandate, everybody hated the individual mandate. I mean, nobody wanted it anyway. So that could have been like, well, the people might think they're getting a good thing. It could screw up the entire market, and then everybody would get screwed up. You take away the subsidies, there are simple fixes that could be done even, you know, at a very local level to fix this if they really wanted to. And you have to remember, you're taking away tax credits from people. That's going to motivate them. It's one thing to sort of say we're taking away this you know, individual mandate, which is, you know, impinging on your liberty and your freedom and its tyranny and everything else. But most people who are getting the tax credits right now are going to want the tax credits. And I think that they'll be a little more vocal about you taking away their insurance, especially because you have to remember, we're not talking about the very, very poor here, because we're not talking about the Medicaid expansion. We're talking about people who make between 138 and 400% of the poverty line. These are working people. And if the government suddenly takes their tax credits away, but half the states still have them, or, you know, a significant number of people still have them, that's going to be...
But Aaron, but I guess I'm confused. I hope you're right. But you know much more about this than I do. But here's my question, though. From what I can tell from the law professors who are fighting this, if the federal government is not allowed to provide subsidies on federal exchanges,
mm-hmm.
only Congress can fix that problem. Is what
I agree.
The Circuit said.
Well, no, I totally agree. First of all, in the very short term, I think that. In other words, the way at least people that I've been reading, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but that you know, they don't. What was that?
I don't know, but that was the worst thing that's happened in my life.
That was the Affordable Care Act alarm. Sorry, guys.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
So
please make that not happen again with your earphones on.
Set up exchanges. Basically, they could set up small laws, which basically said, you know, where our exchange is set up, and now we're outsourcing all of the work to the federal government. And so they don't have to go through the work of setting up an exchange. They could just decide to, quote unquote, set up, and like states could decide to, quote unquote, set up an exchange and outsource the entire thing to the federal government. Well, so you could fix this at a state level. Now the question is, will the states want to? Well, that's an entirely different thing, but states are a lot more answerable to their local constituents, and if their local constituents all of a sudden start losing their insurance en masse, I would imagine they're going to start screaming bloody
murder. I don't know. I'm not as confident about that as you are. I mean, remember that the states that didn't take the Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, but those you have to always remember, that's considered an entitlement. This is a test. I don't know. Here's the thing. But do I think the law will fall apart? No. This will mean that a couple million people will lose their health insurance. It will suck. It will be terrible. But would that be the impetus to repeal the entire law? I don't think so. At that point, you know, probably most people would qualify for hardship exemptions, because without the subsidies, the cost of the premiums would be outside of, you know, sort of what's qualified for being okay. They would be exempt from the mandate. They won't have to buy the insurance. They just won't be able to. And that'll mean, in, you know, tons of people get Medicaid. Lots of states, people will get subsidies to buy insurance. And in other states, mostly red states, they will say, okay, now you can't, you can buy insurance if you want to pay for it, but your local people just screwed you, as did Congress. And would that be, where's the impetus at that point to repeal the law?
Well, let me just say, first of all, I hope you're right about all that, and I'm not going to argue with you because you're definitely the expert, but you, I know you didn't mean to do this, so I'm not putting words in your mouth. You kind of skipped over the idea that millions of people who have health insurance wouldn't have it anymore. And it's not at all clear to me that red states who already had disenfranchised millions of people through not taking the Medicaid expansion wouldn't just say, see, here it is. Obamacare is not working again. I mean, these
why then they could have just I suppose that that is true, but with the Medicaid, this will cost them nothing. They'll just basically be hurt. You know, they all made arguments about why they didn't want to expand Medicaid, and, you know, a certain number of states have not expanded Medicaid. But in this case, they're turning to but that's always considered to be an entitlement. In this case, they're turning to people who are working and were getting a tax credit and said, screw your tax credit. We're not going to let you, we're not going to help you buy private insurance. I just think it's a different flavor of the argument. You have to own the political ramifications of that. They're arguing to a different population.
Right.
They're more likely to vote. They're more likely to probably support them. And they're certainly more likely to be vocal and have some kind of political power to say something. So, we'll have to wait and see. But the Medicaid expansion didn't the fact that they refused the Medicaid expansion did not destroy Obamacare.
It did not destroy Obamacare either. Not having health insurance.
I think it sucks. Don't get me wrong. I think the fact that they've refused the Medicaid expansion sucks.
Yeah.
I think I'm appalled at how, you know, people in government are so, you know, willing to be like, screw you. Anything in the service of trying to destroy this law, we don't care what the ramifications. I agree. I'm not arguing that. But when everyone talks about it's the end of Obamacare, I don't think this is the end of Obamacare any more than the Medicaid expansion becoming optional was the end of Obamacare.
Well, that's good,
means that more people get screwed.
I haven't done a very good job here, and I'm clearly avoiding it because it's boring and confusing. So maybe a metaphor, maybe we have to insert one of the myths Dr. Carroll's debunking, and don't put that in there in 69 other sex myths debunked. But how do we explain what happened yesterday and why it happened?
So the why Eric can explain, because he probably knows the statute better than I do. But what happened is that the circuit court ruled that if you have a federal exchange, which like 36 or some states do, in other words, they didn't set it up locally, they said it, let the feds set up their exchange. In a federal exchange, no one gets subsidies. If you have a state-based exchange, like your local state's running your exchange, you get subsidies. That's it.
But let
me just add a little bit to that, okay? I mean, as Aaron has said a zillion times, there's a three-legged stool supporting this statute. And all three legs, I think Aaron has said, are incredibly important, right? One is that insurance companies have to cover you if you have pre-existing conditions. That's going to make everything more expensive. And people will wait until they get sick if pre-existing conditions have to be covered. So to avoid that problem, we had these other two things, where you have to buy health insurance, otherwise you suffer a penalty.
Right.
But if you can't afford it, and many people can't, then you get this subsidy. And the shocking thing about the decision yesterday is that it took one small subsection of a 2000 document law, one very small section, and said, this section shows that subsidies were not going to be available in the 36 states that have federal exchanges, and they completely ignored the purposes of the law, other provisions of the law, and it was a horrific decision, Pete, horrific, because they said they were relying on plain text, but they were relying on the plain text of one small part and ignoring plain text in the rest of the statute.
Well, this is only shocking for people who haven't read your book, of course, because I don't know. I fully expect at this point that the courts are going to rule in a political manner. They're going to use every means possible to try and dismantle the law. This is the latest, and, you know, and as it gets going, as time goes on, they're going to have to get more and more far-fetched because the easy ways to destroy the law came first. So,
well, but here's the thing, Aaron, and what you said earlier, if the Supreme Court were to affirm this, and I think that would be a disaster for the country, for the law, and for the Supreme Court in the long run, so maybe Roberts won't do that. But if the Supreme Court were to agree with the D.C. Circuit yesterday, then any fixes to that problem, the complicated fixes you mentioned earlier, will be challenged again. Because, well, and Pete, this transcends the health, yeah. the Affordable Care Act. This is the point I really want to make. What we have in this country today are really smart, really well-funded, Cato Institute, Heritage Foundation, famous law professors spending a lot of time trying to figure out any possible way to shoot down this law. And the rise of social media makes that a new phenomenon. It's happened in the past, but nowhere near this well-organized. And this is a real problem for constitutional law, transcending the health care law, because it makes everything more political, and it was really political before this.
All right. Well,
I guess this is where it's like I have to have faith a little bit in the process.
Good luck.
Well, I mean, you can laugh, but it's like at some point this will be. You have to still remember this law only truly went into effect 6 months ago. It is everybody talks about it like it's been around forever, but the true all of it, it's been going on for 6 months.
So, what I'm laughing at though is the general agreement on obviously the importance of the law and its purpose, which is we all agree on that. What I'm laughing at literally is these two smart guys, brilliant guys, both of you, who I love and adore and I'm attracted to physically. One being more optimistic than the other, one being an optimist and one being a pessimist. That.
Well, I think
it's
Eric
kind of a sad laugh.
Well, no, but I think Eric is more concerned. I mean, because of what Eric does. Eric is more concerned about what this means for the legal institution and what it means for the idea that we have a third branch of government, which is supposed to be independent. That is the thing. I'm more concerned about what is this going to mean for the healthcare system of the United States. And I think as this becomes more and more entrenched, which it will be by the time that this winds its way to the Supreme Court, that. Should it be ripped out? I mean, imagine tomorrow if somebody came up with a crack case that got Medicare made unconstitutional. Do you believe for a second that the people would sit around and be like, oh, what are you going to do? We'd start all over. There would be an
Well, Aaron,
well, what do you think of that, Eric?
I have to say, first of all, I hope you're right. But there are historical examples that strongly cut the other way. And let me give one really quickly. In 1929, there's a stock market crash, the Great Depression. FDR gets elected, and Congress gives him a power, and between the Congress and the president, they pass hundreds of New Deal laws to fix this emergency, and they were struck down over and over and over and over again for 5 years.
Right.
And then Roosevelt wins a huge landslide reelection in 1936.
Right. That is how I believe the process fixes itself, is eventually the people
Wait. He fixed it by going on the radio.
Right.
And personally insulting the Supreme – let me finish. Personally insulting the Supreme Court. Literally. He went on to – these are old men who are destroying this country. They are past their prime. They shouldn't be on the court anymore. And I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to offer this court packing plan.
Right.
That's what changed it. We don't have a president that strong today. I mean, that's Franklin Delano Roosevelt. That's not
right.
Obama.
I agree.
That's A. B, it took a crisis. In other words, the court packing plan was a crisis that scared the court to death.
Right. I still think that when you talk about trying to fix it, that was removed directly from – you're talking about fixing sort of economic factors that were causing the Depression and everything. And that could be argued sort of, above the – I don't want to say above the level of most people, but it wasn't directly affecting their everyday lives. This is – we're taking away money from you tomorrow. I think that that's the kind of thing, or we were taking away your health insurance. Again, I think that would be such an absolute effect on so many people instantaneously when other people were still getting the benefit. I think we would see a rise out of people that we might not have seen. If they're talking about Dodd-Frank and they're talking about fixing the banks and everything else, the average American is like, meh, and they're just, that's an argument that takes place in Washington.
Right.
So
first of all, I hope you're right, and I think you probably will be right, but my agenda here is I don't want the left or people like you who are nationally known healthcare policy experts. I don't want liberal and progressive think tanks to take this passively.
I don't. Oh, I'm totally not happy. If you saw my Twitter yesterday, I'm angry, but I'm trying to just take deep breaths because, again, what do I do today? There's nothing, it still right. has to wind its way until this gets to the Supreme Court, as it was the last time.
Well, let me tell you what you can do today, actually. I actually have a suggestion about that.
Oh, here we go.
I do, and I'm dead serious about it, too. So here's what you're fighting. You're fighting the Cato Institute, the Heritage Foundation, and really smart con law professors teamed with experts to try to show how this one sentence in this 2,000-page bill undermines the entire law. What you need to do is get it, and you're doing it great. What I'm suggesting is you need to fight that, Aaron.
No, we are. Like, our blog, you should say, it's like been nonstop wall-to-wall coverage. We've had a lot of traffic. You know, we've got Nicholas Bagley, who's been writing about this constantly.
I read his stuff. He was great. He was great. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm not. But yeah, remember, this is also not my area of expertise. But I'm more than happy to promote people who are absolutely making these arguments. I just feel also that this is one of those. Until it hits the Supreme Court, it is somewhat theater. It's the same way I felt about the individual mandate. It's like, is it? You know, we're gonna have a scorecard of how many judges are for or against it. Until it gets to the final decision, it's just not gonna matter. In fact, I don't even want to shine too much light on it. I feel like it's giving.
Individual mandate was eventually upheld on this silly tax rationale.
But you've convinced me that it's not about how strong is the case. It's about politics. Of course, they found a tiny one-word loophole. That's all that's left.
Right.
So that's what they're going to go for.
Pete, I will say that transcending the Affordable Care Act issues, I kind of hope, and I think it's happening. People wake up to see that even at the lower court level, constitutional litigation, or this wasn't constitutional litigation, but this kind of high-profile public interest litigation, is politics all the way down. Six judges have upheld it. They're all Clinton or Obama appointees, and two judges struck it down. They're both Bush appointees, which is not to say there aren't Bush appointees who might go the other way, or Clinton, but overall, this is not a legal case. This is a political case that's being hidden in the context of a legal case. And that's what I've been trying to say in your show for 4 years.
But has it always been that way? This is what I'm fascinated by. Has it always been this way? We're just noticing?
It's just worse now. But in 1803, the first constitutional law case ever was the most political case probably ever decided. Bush versus Gore, all the New Deal cases. It has been political from the beginning, and that's why my book is called Supreme Myths.
I agree. I'm totally on board. In fact, I remember classes I took, the few classes I really wish I'd taken more of in college, were very much like agreeing with you. Is it we notice it more because that it's of more social media and we're just more aware, or is it because I'm just plugged in, or has it gotten worse?
So CNN actually asked me that question, and I paused for a minute. It's not gotten worse, and there was significant media attention on the political nature of the Supreme Court throughout history, and always has been. Maybe social media makes it more present, but Aaron, the real problem is really smart people who follow this stuff, who think it's mostly values and mostly politics, still want to hang on to this myth. That the Supreme Court specifically is doing something noble and different. It's part of American culture, you know? I mean, it's...
Yeah, I don't know. Absolutely it is.
You know, and it's just wrong. It's been wrong from the beginning, and it's still wrong.
Mario in New Jersey, you're on Stand Up with Dr. Aaron Carroll and Professor Eric Siegel, at Aaron E. Carroll, at E. Spin Siegel, if you want to tweet along. Go ahead, Mario. Hi, Mario.
So I have to take issue with Professor Siegel's... comparison with the Medicaid expansion in red states to the taking away these premium tax credits. There's a big difference between actually never getting a benefit and then taking one away.
Right, Mario, I conceded that yesterday. And let me just say, I agree in the political process that might make a difference. It will not matter to Scalia or Thomas.
Oh, no, I agree with you there. I agree. That's why I think that this could be fixed by the system. I'm talking long-term with voting. It's not. I agree. It doesn't matter to the Supreme Court.
Listen, I went to the same law school as Pete, okay? And we both agree that there's no way this happens. The Supreme Court takes this case. I don't even think he takes this case, by the way. By the way, is this case or similar case coming up in a more conservative circuit?
No. Okay. But here's the thing. So there is this. So yesterday on my nerdy con law professor list, where Jonathan Alder resides, and he's the guy who created these lawsuits, I think both you and Dr. Carroll, are underestimating how much hatred right-wing think tanks and right-wing scholars have for how the Affordable Care Act was passed. At the end of the day, when Jonathan, who's a very smart guy, is pressed, you know what he falls back, and this lawsuit is silly, it's frivolous, he falls back on, this law should never have been passed because there were procedural irregularities in the passing of the law. At midnight, up or down vote in the House, it passed by one vote. They hate this law more than you can possibly.
No, I agree, but I don't think that they're America. I think that they're going to take every avenue that they can. The question is whether, and here again, this is where I sound almost like I'm buying into the whole thing. It's like, if they win, and they get this done, and America doesn't rise up enough to say, like, we care passionately enough to fix this, then so be it. Like, it's a republic. That is how it works.
But John Roberts had the perfect opportunity, and a far more legally justifiable one, to gut the ACA, right?
No.
And he didn't take the opportunity.
No. The argument that the mandate was not justified by the Commerce Clause, which he eventually accepted, is as frivolous and silly an argument as there's ever been. As a legal matter, as a political matter.
The Fourth Circuit, by the way.
Say again.
So the Fourth Circuit's the argument was that the law is ambiguous, right? And because it's ambiguous, the IRS should get deference in interpreting it.
Now I'm going to stop you because you can make 1,000 logical legal arguments that show the D.C. Circuit's decision was dead wrong. I agree with all of them. In fact, I've been tweeting and posting that there is no valid legal argument here, but it didn't stop 2 D.C. Circuit judges from striking it down. Law doesn't matter. Law doesn't matter. I'm going to say it again. Law doesn't matter. Will it matter at the Supreme Court? You don't know. We don't know. It'll depend on how Justice Roberts views the relative benefits and negatives of striking this law down.
No, I agree. I'm talking about the Fourth Circuit's decision.
Yeah. Well, there were 2 Obama judges and a Clinton judge.
No, I understand. But their decision, and let's say it's the same decision is held by the en banc D.C. Circuit.
Yes.
And that basically said that if the law is ambiguous, we're going to leave it to the IRS to was it Chevron deference?
Yes, called? Which is correct. That's the correct rule.
Okay, so my question is, if that's the final ruling, and let's say the Supreme Court doesn't take it, right?
Okay.
And that's the final opinion.
Yes.
Does President Cruz able to come in and make his IRS say, we interpret it saying that the federal exchanges can't give subsidies?
If there's President Cruz, and by the way,
you're not allowed to say President Cruz on this channel.
All of the Tea Party senators, I mean Cruz and Lee and Rubio and all those people were on the briefs, you know, in this case. I mean they all put their name on striking this down. I don't know what the politics will be. I mean, Aaron says the American people are going to love this, and therefore the politics.
I don't know. I'm guessing. I don't know.
I don't know. But as a legal matter, Ronald Reagan came in 1980 and tried to dismantle welfare as we know it, which is what he ran on. He couldn't do it, but he did subvert a lot of programs that were already in effect. And so President Cruz could very easily not enforce or administer Obamacare, and there'd be nothing anybody could do about it.
By the way, I wouldn't be surprised if this is fixed legislatively in the next year or so.
What?
Oh, my God.
The Congress
Aaron,
of Mars?
Which
Congress?
Aaron, I think we both agree that they're going to address the employer mandate at some point, don't you think?
I don't think that until this has been in long enough, I don't think that the Republicans will do anything to touch this bill because that is seen as I'm accepting it exists.
I think after the election, things are going to change a little bit. I'm not saying it's going to be, they're going to fix everything. I just think that there's like the medical device tax and the employer mandate. I think things need to be addressed, and I think they'd be willing to. I mean, this is not good. Aaron, you're completely right. This is not good politically to take away subsidies from 5 million people. I think.
What did David Frum tweet yesterday about? He can't think of anything that would have helped the Senate Democrats, maintain their majority.
I mean, in 2014, right? Red
yeah.
Democrats.
Well, listen. That all may be right. But we're gambling on a political perspective when what really should happen is what I think Aaron or maybe Mario said earlier, which is the full D.C. Circuit, all of the judges are likely to hear this case and reverse the panel decision and say the Fourth Circuit was right. This is all nonsense.
And then what happens?
And then the question will be, will the Supreme Court take the case? They shouldn't. But
well,
I'm here to tell
four,
you.
Right? Aaron,
I'm, I'm here to tell you that the Supreme Court, listen, Congress tried to end slavery and the Supreme Court said you can't do that in 1856. You know, that led to the Civil War. Congress tried to end the Depression through all kinds of programs. Supreme Court for 5 years said you can't do that. There's been, you know, Citizens United is incredibly unpopular, but the Supreme Court has stuck to its guns and is going even further. The Voting Rights Act passed by Congress should have been upheld. It was struck down with terrible consequences. Don't be so clear that the Supreme Court is going to follow these political tea leaves and do the right legal thing.
Don't. I should say that. I am fully prepared for the Supreme Court, if they hear this case, to go the way of like saying that this is not what I say. When I say that I think that the process can work itself out, I don't mean the Supreme Court. I mean that if it is as bad as I think it is, that the American people will go, that ain't right. They will elect new people, hopefully, who will do the opposite, and then we'll move forward. But that, I mean, that is, I don't know. That's the way America works. I don't see another way. I wish the Supreme Court, you know, reacted the way that you think it does in the West Wing. It doesn't.
Let me bring on.
If we had President Bartlett, he would go on national television and point to the Supreme Court and say, "Listen, you old."
Okay, see, this is what I will completely. I'm watching the series over again. It's funny.
I am too. I watched it all last week.
He is nowhere near as liberal, first of all, as people think he is in his actions. They are so media, you know, moderate in what they actually will pass. And he had more trouble getting anyone on the Supreme Court than whatever. He had to do that silly bargain thing just to get someone to replace their most liberal guy. I just don't think that it's possible. Almost, it's just. FDR.
Subject, I think it's the best show ever on television.
I watched
it than people think.
I watched a few episodes of The West Wing when it was on. I'm watching it all on Netflix over again, and I'm loving it. And I haven't binge watched anything since the Gary Shandling show. I watched it a couple of years ago, and I'd never seen that either.
My favorite episode is The Supremes. It's the one where they appoint like the new Supreme Court justices.
I like Toby and the raincoat and the homeless guy.
Early. Those are early episodes.
Let me bring. When does Rob Lowe come on? Let me bring.
No, he's
Keith.
On at the beginning. He leaves in like season 3 or 4.
Let me bring a fifth voice on.
Let me just say, I promise, no matter what, not to yell at Keith this morning.
Mario in New Jersey is still on. Keith is on. Dr. Aaron Carroll. Yeah, everybody's here. It's a party. Five men.
Let me say one thing just for Keith.
Yep.
Free Gaza.
Watch Free Gaza. The episode War Crimes. West Wing. It's a great episode.
I agree. We could do this all day, though.
Yeah.
So my question is this. Jonathan Adler retweeted somebody, I think it was from Prof's Law Blog, and it said that it didn't necessarily require Congress to rewrite the law, saying that states could theoretically set up their own exchange and have the task of federal government of administering it and basically say, we're going to have healthcare.gov be our backbone. Yes. We're just going to create this fiction of, you know, our own exchange, call it a day, and the whole how big thing
goes
away.
That's exactly what I said was a possible fix, but that would require states to do it. The question is, would those states do it?
Listen, hold on, folks, listen. Listen, just this week, I have been fighting with the Attorney General's office of my state, asking them not to defend the same-sex marriage lawsuit that's currently going in Georgia, because 6 attorney generals have refused it, and so on and so on. These red states have to cater to Tea Party influence in a way that you can't even imagine.
Yeah,
so what's happening is, even though same-sex marriage is winning in every single state and every single court, they can't take the public position that we're not going to defend, because then they suffer political consequences.
But again, I'll argue that with respect to same-sex marriage, those Tea Partiers who are screaming are arguing we don't want those people over there to get something that we don't personally like or care about. This is, I'm taking something away from many Tea Partiers, a tax credit you were already receiving.
If I could just channel Dr. Carroll here. You know, you're talking about the same states that say we don't like welfare, yet when you look at the welfare map, receive the majority of it. I think it's a very different situation when you ask in the aggregate, do you like state exchanges? And it's a very different spot when you say citizens of my state aren't getting these rebates unless we do X, and therefore we have to do X. And I think that changes the calculus to such a degree that governors in the red states will be saying, look, we're not doing this to help Obamacare. We don't care about that. We're still going to fight that, whatever. And you're going to see the rhetoric turn to, this is what we need to do to help the people in our state. And, you know, we're still going to fight Obamacare wherever we can.
I hope everybody is right. But I will say that it wasn't like these governors didn't know that millions of people with Medicaid expansion would now be off the rolls.
Again,
and I know you're saying those are poor people who don't vote, but there were a lot of people who do vote who were putting a lot of pressure on those governors,
but
a lot
again,
of interest groups, to not take this horrific
difference
step.
Between, I think there's a big difference between you didn't have this, you're still not going
right.
to have it, and you had it now, and we're taking it away from you.
By the taking way, something yeah. away is very different than saying, you know, yeah. we theoretically won't be giving you something you never had to begin with. That's why it was very different when it came
passing,
to be.
Yeah,
like, what if we took away, for example, what if we took away your land?
Guys, by definition, for conservatives, this is a major tax increase.
Right, exactly.
Don't forget.
Pete, I'm launching a strike on your office.
You are. Where?
Yeah, I don't think. Wait a second, hopefully. Mario. I'm not going to argue with you whether I'm not going to argue the numbers with you, but the political rhetoric game is not that this is a major tax increase, and the proof of that pudding is the people who are fighting this are really, really against tax increases. But let me just say one last thing about this.
That's
hopefully this will change. Hopefully you guys are right, and I wouldn't bet either way on this. I'm not making a prediction. I think you are underestimating two things. One, the unbelievable passion against Obamacare by a lot of people with money. And two, more importantly, there is a sub level of racism here. There really is. You know, there is a sub level that...
More with the Medicaid expansion, though. Much more with the Medicaid expansion.
Not that kind of racism. I'm talking about we can't let this black president have a major success.
So, okay, I don't even want to get into that because I think it's absolutely removed the whole argument from where we want it to be.
Who's staying in your guest house?
I don't underestimate it. Believe me, I've been talking about the Affordable Care Act nonstop for I can't even think about how long now. I in absolutely no way underestimate the passion of the people that hate this law. And I don't think that even should this go in the direction of, you know, supporting the idea that we can have exchange, if it goes the administration's way, I fully believe that there will be people that continue to fight this. When I say that I'm, you know, reasonably sort of at least optimistic that in the future it's going to go. It's the same way that, you know, I remember people saying, like, there's no way that, you know, Obama can be elected. There's no way that we can ever pass this law in the first place. There's no way that once Kennedy, you know, was out of the Senate that this could possibly pass. There's no – and it's like, well, at some point either the American people want it and it's going to go that way or it's not going to happen.
Boys, we got to take a break.
How dare
you? Thank you, Melanie. Thank you, Melanie.
You're welcome.
I think boys is sexist. Why are you calling us boys? We're
hey,
men.
Little man.
At Aaron
hey,
E. Carroll, at E. Spin Siegel, at Mario J. Russo, at K. Kaplan. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Stand Up. Joined right now by my good friends Aaron Carroll, who's a health policy expert and a doctor and an author and contributor to the New York Times, Indiana University, etc. And also Professor Eric Siegel, who has a guest house. And
I do not
also...
have a guest house.
Aaron, you don't?
I don't have a guest house.
I don't have a guest house.
Aaron has a screened-in porch.
That I do.
That's really
I
nice.
I do not.
You don't have a screened-in porch.
I do
what
not.
Has been your most recent... Your house is ancient, beautiful, but very old. You've had some issues with the plumbing, et cetera. What has been your latest problem with your house before we get back to the Affordable Care Act and so on? Eric, and then Aaron.
I currently have no internet or cable, and I have not for days, and Comcast is the Antichrist. Go ahead.
And now a word from our sponsor, Comcast. Go ahead, Chris, with the Comcast live read we were scheduled to do.
I would love to do a Comcast read for you if you would just tell me what exactly about Comcast you want me to talk about.
I would
Comcast.
Love to come to my goddamn house.
That's a throwback to a viral video, Pete. You probably missed it.
Oh, I didn't know what you're talking about. Aaron, any issues with your home?
No, I just find it fascinating. I think our homes are almost metaphors for the two of us.
What's your home like?
Well, no, mine is new and works perfectly, and it's got full of technology. And it's,
what are you saying exactly?
And Eric's is old, and the plumbing doesn't work. So there you go.
All right.
Wow.
Like to combat that.
Wow, that is.
Can I ask Aaron a question? I have a question.
No.
For Aaron.
I have a question.
Okay. Pete, go
ahead. I'll ask mine, then you ask yours.
Okay.
Okay. So, is this whole what happened yesterday and in the courts, this D.C. Circuit appellate, whatever the hell it is, that struck down this thing? is basically what happened is they're saying, well, the legislation didn't have what it says it had. The Senate staffers, the Senate is saying, well, we meant everybody to have these access to these subsidies, and the lawsuit is saying, well, you didn't write it correctly.
I'll take Eric's side. I think you're trying to look for rational, logical explanations to wrap your head around to explain why this happened when I really believe deep down inside there are people that hate this law and they found a way to try.
I know, but is this not a technicality, a typo?
Yeah,
where
it's totally what
it is. This is how it works. This is we have a well-established legal framework for this where – There's a Supreme Court case called Chevron, and it governs these cases. And what it says is, if a statute is completely clear and unambiguous, then an agency interpretation against that clarity should be struck down. If a statute is unclear or ambiguous, then we give huge discretion to agencies, and in this case the IRS, and their interpretations will only be struck down if they're completely arbitrary and capricious. What the D.C. Circuit did is it said, we're not going to look at the law. We're not going to look at 2,000 pages. We're not going to look at the purpose of the law, the intent of the law, or the goals of the law. We're going to take one out-of-context sentence, say this is clear because it said states, not feds, and then undermine the purposes of the entire law. It violated every single rule of statutory interpretation we have, which is what the Fourth Circuit said. The Fourth Circuit said, this law in toto is completely ambiguous on this point. Because it's ambiguous, the 2,000 pages, we let the IRS administer it unless what the IRS is doing is completely foolish, and it's obviously not. That's the best
but,
I can
but, do. And the other thing is, the other question I just wanted to ask, and then I'll let you go, Eric, is ask your question to Aaron, why kind of the conservative ideology would say to me, like, all right, if there was kind of some kind of rational conversation, all right, we agree, we'll pass this Affordable Care Act, but because of, we're federalists, we believe that states should all set up their own exchanges, and that'll be our compromise. And then pragmatic liberals would say, well, we like that anyway, and that's fine, and, we're good with that. Like, what am I missing? How come states didn't set up their own?
You're trying to argue with logic. You're trying to, you're trying to.
But how come? Well, then how come states didn't set up their
Obamacare, Pete? They hate it.
So the states.
Pete, we argued for so long that you have to remember that, the Affordable Care Act, the way that it's structured, which is based on Romneycare, was the conservative plan for health care reform.
I know.
You're trying to be like, well, how can this possibly be? It has nothing to do with logic. Nothing.
So, right. No, but of the states that do have state exchanges versus those that don't,
right.
are the states that do blue and states that don't red?
Yes.
Correct. Because that's
to a state.
The illusion. That gave them the illusion of never, ever trying to participate in Obamacare. In other words, all of a sudden they realize, like, we can just.
But it's okay. But again, just to be clear that I'm trying to be rational and they're not. Just to be clear, the states themselves said, we know this is the law, but we're not going to design a system.
The law said that the feds would run the exchanges, and so they could default to them. I don't think that there, again, you have to look at some of the people. There have been people who have been covering it since the beginning. No one was making the argument that the intent of the law was to encourage states to do their own exchanges by withholding subsidies. Yeah. This was something that came up after the fact, after it was noticed. It was a way to try to take the law down. But, no state that defaulted to the feds thought, oh, we're going to lose our subsidies.
So I want to say one thing really fast before we get done, because I think Aaron said it or someone said it. So this is why I'm not up. This is why I'm worried. I'm not pessimistic, but I'm worried. Someone used the word illusion. I spent 5 years at the Department of Justice working on really political constitutional law cases, Lockerbie, Iran-Contra, First Amendment cases. Let me just say that it's all of everything in politics is illusion. These governors don't care what happens to their states. They care if they can be reelected. They care if they have national ambitions. It's all about how it looks, not what it is.
How dare you? What question did you want to ask Aaron?
Well, I didn't have time to answer this, but it's my understanding, and my wife has done a lot of research into this because she got very engaged in a woman in Texas who couldn't afford health care. Aaron, the states that didn't take the Medicaid expansion, which only happened because of a terrible Supreme Court decision,
mm-hmm.
My understanding is that was a really – it wasn't a death knell, but it was a very serious blow to Obamacare.
It undid a lot of the understandings. No, but it was a blow to the people who don't get it. But did it make it the law was going to fail or the law was going to fall?
I didn't say fail. I said blow, serious blow.
Well, it depends what you mean by – maybe we're misinterpreting blow. When I hear you say blow, I assume you mean it makes it so that the law is less likely to remain
– No, that's not what I mean. No.
Okay,
I mean,
I'm misinterpreting.
The purpose of the law was undermined significantly by all these people being off.
Absolutely.
The
but, again, I would argue that you have to remember that when they passed traditional Medicaid back in the 60s, the last state to finally accept it was Arizona in the 80s. The mid-80s, these things, you have to look at this in the spectrum of how long it takes. You have to take a historical perspective. It took almost 20 years for Medicaid to go fully into effect. I'm not surprised at all that, one year after the Medicaid expansion absolutely started, 6 months after, that we have half the states not on board yet. I expect that these things will take time, but I have to believe in sort of like what I have seen from evidence and data that these programs work over time and that people will, see that and accept it and that it will move in that direction.
So what's interesting about that, and I agree, I'm not arguing with you at all. What's very interesting about that is we have two national politicians who understand exactly what you just said, President Obama and Chief Justice Roberts. They both play the long game. You know, when it came to same-sex marriage, when it came to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, when it came to the Affordable Care Act, I have no doubt that President Obama is smart enough and engaged enough to understand he's playing a very long game, right? That's what you're saying, Aaron, and I think it's right. I think it's exactly right. The interesting thing is that is also Chief Justice Roberts' mentality. He did it with the Voting Rights Act. He's doing it with affirmative action.
Yep.
He drops these nuggets along the way, and then, boom, he strikes.
Yep.
And my concern is who's smarter, Obama or Roberts? And I'm hoping it's Obama, and I'm hoping Roberts has some degree of humility. But he is playing the long game on the Affordable Care Act, and he might be.
I honestly, it's like I try not to understand. This is, again, I'll say, like, I try not to understand because it's like I cannot fathom what his motivations are or
all
what
right.
It is. I just have to believe that the system, it's almost, I don't believe in the wisdom of crowds most of the time. But in this case, it's that, if they – it's that people will see if they remove the subsidies from 4 or 5 million people, like with a snap of a fingers, I have to believe that a significant number of them will be like, we don't want that, and they'll fix
please.
It. And some will be left out in the snow. But over time, as Medicaid was picked up over time, as Medicare has been expanded, people will want it.
At Aaron E. Carroll, at Eastman Siegel, I can't put out the whole hour on SoundCloud, but I can't guarantee that Aaron won't. He could be recording it. I don't have enough money to hire a lawyer to say cease and desist. I know Eric won't put it up online because he doesn't know how.
But
Aaron E. Carroll, at E. Spin Siegel, some way we'll find a way to share this with your friends. And then they'll all buy subscriptions and everybody's a winner. Thank you, guys.